Okay, good evening. I believe we have a quorum. We can call the meeting to order. It's 6:01. Welcome to tonight's meeting of the Regional Advisory Council. My name is John Cabot, and I represent, I'm the chair for the Northern RAC, and I represent non-consumptive. I'd like to go ahead and start with introductions, and we'll start over there with Craig.
I'm Craig Van Tassel. I'm from Camas, and I'm a sportsman representative.
Matt Clark from Ogden at large.
Kevin McLeod, West Haven at large.
John Wall, Riverdale at large.
Mike Lauder, Hooper, sportsman's rep.
Justin Oliver, West Haven at large.
Robert Sanchez, Forest Service.
Joel Ferry, Brigham City, represent agriculture.
Russ Lawrence from Ogden, public at large.
Chad Jensen, elected Cache County.
Kristen Purdy, Ogden, non-consumptive.
Bryce Thurgood Perry, at large.
Justin Doling with the Division of Wildlife. I'm serve as the executive secretary, and I'm a non-voting member.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to ask that everyone please turn off the ringers on your cell phones so we can have an uninterrupted meeting. The purpose of the Regional Advisory Council meeting is to gather input from the public concerning wildlife management, policy, rules, and regulations. The council will then make recommendations to the Wildlife Board. And the Wildlife Board considers the recommendations from the five Regional Advisory Councils and sets a policy for all protected species in Utah. This meeting will be recorded for the minutes and will be available at the DWR webpage. So I ask that if you are speaking tonight that you use the microphone, and we ask that you state your name and the city you're from when you make your comments. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the agenda for tonight's meeting. If there is no objection, we will approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. There being no objection, the agenda for tonight's meeting is approved. The next business in order is approval of the minutes. I believe everyone should have received a copy through email of last month's meeting. Are there any edits or corrections that need to be made to those? Seeing none, the minutes will be approved as circulated. The next business in order is the regional update by Justin. Let's do the Wildlife Board meeting update.
Okay, just let me give you a little brief recap of what happened at the Wildlife Board yesterday afternoon. The waterfowl recommendations and rule amendments passed as presented. The statewide elk management plan revisions also passed as presented, but there was some interest in raising the Monroe age objective above what was recommended in the plan. And the board made a motion and voted on that, and it turned out to be a tie vote, and the chairman broke the tie by allowing the Monroe unit to stay at the age objective identified in the elk management plan. So if I remember right, the Monroe was going down and the other two units were coming up, so they'd be together. For bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime, recommendations or rule amendments. The division did incorporate the boundary changes that the RAC made, or made a motion to accept those boundary changes. So we had the Cache extended archery boundary change, and then the Pilot Mountain pronghorn change, and the Snowville pronghorn unit boundary change. And so the division incorporated those into the recommendations. And the board ended up approving the Bucks Bowls once-in-a-lifetime 2016 season dates and application timeline as presented by the division, which allowed for magnification on muzzle loaders. So the division's presentation was recommending muzzle loaders be allowed to have scopes, and the board went ahead and approved that. So there's no restriction on magnification. It can go anywhere the scope will allow you. Southeastern deer management plans also were approved as presented. CWMU management plans were also approved as presented, although the board did ask the division to essentially conduct an analysis of the distribution of permits on limited entry units between the CWMUs and the public draw. And that's an action log item that the division will be working on over the next year. And that includes all CWMUs that are located within limited entry units, elk, deer, and moose. And then the Landowner Association permit numbers for 2016 also passed as presented, and the board again developed an action log item to have the Landowner Association rule essentially revisited over the next year. There were some concerns again with how the distribution of permits are allocated between landowner associations and the larger hunting unit. And then all the rule amendments for the CWMU program are also accepted as presented. And then the board did pass a resolution to send a letter regarding Mexican wolf recovery efforts to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And that's kind of a recap, unless there's questions.
What was the contents of the letter? What was that to?
The division, and I'm trying to think of all the contents to the letter. I'm going to have to go off memory here, but it addressed concerns we have with the historic boundary of the Mexican wolf and whether or not it came that far into Utah. There was a lot of reference in the letter to possibly hybridization between the gray wolves and the Mexican wolves, and those are the two things that are coming to mind. There were a couple other talking points within the letter, but I can't recall at this point.
I think the letter itself will probably be available for review or for.
Once it's signed and sent this.
Okay. All right. The next business in order is the regional update, and Justin Dahling will provide that as well.
Okay, let me give you just a brief update on what's going on in our region. Our aquatic section hosted another successful conference. It was titled Confluence. It was a Weber River conference. This is the second annual time this conference has been held. It's to try to get all the different water users on not necessarily the same page, but talking to each other when it comes to the demands and the different water uses that occur on the Weber River, and trying to consider all the different uses and see if there can't be some balance there. They also informed me that the ice is starting to begin to form on several of our mountain lakes. I think that probably has continued over the last couple of days, although the weather is projected to moderate. So I have not heard at this point of any safe ice conditions throughout northern Utah in our normal reservoir locations. Stream fishing continues to remain good, and our aquatic section is experimenting with stocking wiper and walleye fry in Willard, and they put those fry in a bath solution, and it essentially marks the bone that's found in the ear, so they can sample those fish when they do a gill net survey, and then pull that ear bone
and determine whether or not they were part of the stocking effort. And what they found was that, when I'm talking fry, I'm just talking little tiny guys. And so they're a lot more affordable. You can put more in the reservoir. And if they do make it into the mid-range size, you know, yearlings or the adult category, it's a much better, cheaper way to try to maintain that fishery. And when they did their recent gillnet survey, 18 of the 19 walleye that were stocked as fry were marked. So the survival of those fry was very, very high, and that's encouraging. And they'll continue to look at that and continue to study that over the next couple of years and see if that's a viable option for maintaining not only walleye but wiper and willard. Our habitat section still has a few juniper projects going on in West Box Elder, and they're in the middle of trying to create a new database for our watershed restoration program. So this year, when you go on and submit projects for the watershed restoration program to be considered for funding, those that there'll be a new database that you'll have to access, and there'll probably be a little bit of a learning curve as far as how you enter your information from years previous. The outreach section wanted everybody to know that the Elk Festival at Hardware Ranch will be December 12th. That festival, I believe, begins at 10 o'clock and goes till about 3. If you've not been up there for that festival, it's a pretty good event. At our Great Salt Lake program, they are interviewing for the assistant at Farmington Bay, and that'll occur the first part of December. And currently, as far as cyst harvest goes on the Great Salt Lake, brine shrimp cysts, the harvest has exceeded a little over 20 million pounds, and it looks to be a really, really good year for the brine shrimp companies. There's still a fair number of cysts per liter, and that's the way they determine whether or not that season stays open, is based on the average cyst count per liter of water. And so the projection is that they'll continue to have a good harvest, and it may actually be a record year. For our law enforcement section, they'll be doing some winter range patrols like we did last winter. So if you have an interest in getting out with an officer during the evening and patrolling winter range, and it's more of a make ourselves present and let folks know that we're out there watching our winter ranges and looking for illegal activity on those winter ranges. You can either contact myself if you'd like to join one of the officers, or you can go ahead and contact Dave Beveridge, our lieutenant. And then in our wildlife section, there's going to be a deer capture project on the cache. That's part of that collaring effort to look at annual survival of deer on the cache, and that'll be the 6th, 7th, and 8th of December. They actually will be flying some of the deer back to the staging location and placing a GPS collar on those animals. So if you have an interest in getting involved in that, I'd suggest you get a hold of Darren DuBois. He's here tonight, so if you want to hit him up, he can give you a little more detail. And then the last item I have is we do have plans to do a bighorn sheep transplant off of Antelope Island, and that'll occur January 4th through the 6th, weather permitting. And again, if the RAC has an interest in coming out to that transplant effort, either contact myself or Randy Wood, and we can get you plugged in. So that's all I have, unless there's any questions.
Any questions for Justin? Okay, the meeting will proceed as follows. A representative from the Division of Wildlife Resources will make a presentation on the agenda item, and then we will have questions from the public on the presentation. And I would remind you that this is a portion of the meeting for questions only. At that time, we will then turn to the RAC for questions regarding the presentation. And then comments from the public will follow the questions from the RAC. If you'd like to make a comment regarding the presentation, we ask that you fill out a blue comment card, which are located on the table in the back of the room, and then pass them over here to Jody so that we can have a record of your comment. questions. After the public comment period, we will then move to the RAC for comment on the agenda item. The council will then make a motion and recommend action by the Wildlife Board on the agenda item. Any council members who wish to abstain from voting will state their conflict, and council members that are voting in opposition to a motion, we ask also that you provide a reasoning for that so that can be passed along to the Wildlife Board. And we will then continue through the agenda until we've completed for this evening. Okay, the first presentation we will have is on R657-3 rule amendments on live lobster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the RAC. I have a very short presentation for you tonight. I'd like to talk with you about Rule 657-3. This is the Collection, Importation, Transportation, and Possession of Animals Rule. My name is Paul Thompson. I'm the Aquatics Manager out of our Ogden office, and I'm giving this presentation for Drew Cushing, our Warm Water Sport Fish Coordinator. So why is the Division of Wildlife recommending changes to Rule 657-3? This is our CIP rule. The current rule requires a certificate of registration to possess live aquatic animals for any commercial use. This includes live fish and crustaceans held in tanks for human consumption at restaurants and grocery stores and at specialty markets. Neither the Utah Department of Agriculture nor the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources desires to govern or control these types of activities, at least within reason. So the change we'd propose to make is specifically for marine aquatic animals, and in order to exempt live aquatic animal tanks in restaurants and stores from this COR process, and COR is the Certificate of Registration. A definition is needed to separate the species of concern that we might have concern with from species that do not need regulatory oversight like marine aquatic animals. So for marine aquatic animals, a COR would not be required provided that this animal would spend its entire life cycle in a marine environment. It's not a species classified as invasive or nuisance by the state or federal law. It's used for immediate human consumption, usually at least within 30 days. The animal is obtained legally, and it's not released alive. And that is all I have. I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the public? Questions from the RAC? Craig?
So who's going to regulate this?
So if an animal is sold for human consumption, the Department of Agriculture regulates those animals, and if it's for personal consumption, it's the Division of Wildlife. But for these marine animals, that's the purpose of this amendment. We would not have any regulation because those animals cannot survive in Utah if they were released. That's still one of the stipulations, is you don't release them a lot. So we're not concerned about those marine animals that can come from saltwater. So nobody would need to really govern those, and then we would worry about the other animals that might be a concern.
So does the health department, are they involved? Or?
Department of Agriculture is the ones that monitor those, the ones for sale.
Any others? Paul, so had this rule been enforced previously so that, the grocery stores or whatever were getting CORs, or it's just never been really enforced?
Great question, and I had that question myself when I saw this presentation, so I did follow up and ask that question. It's a rule that's been in place, but for the most part was not, there was no follow-through on it, and then we decided that we needed to move it forward to make it legal for these establishments to have these animals legally.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the RAC? Okay, comments from the public, and before we do that, I want to
mentioned that if you represent yourself, you're allowed a 3-minute comment period. If you represent an organized group, then we allow you for 5 minutes, and our vice chair will keep a record of your time. Are there any comments from the public on this particular issue? I don't have any cards here. Seeing no comments, RAC, do you have any comments and or a motion?
Make a motion, we pass it as presented.
Second. Okay. Give a second. Whoever wants to. John. Okay, so we have a motion and a second for accepting the presentation as presented. Any comment on the motion or discussion on the motion? Okay. All in favor? Signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Thank you, Paul. Okay, next business in order is the 2016 Black Bear Recommendation and Rule Amendments by Leslie McFarland, Mammals Coordinator. And Weber State alum.
It's true. He was my professor. My mentor. All right. So thank you. I'm back here again on Black Bear. I'll give you a little bit of history, especially for those newer RAC members. We have a 12-year plan that was approved in 2011, so it goes through 2023. The plan was put together and recommended by the Utah Black Bear Advisory Committee, which consisted of the members, groups and different members that are listed here. The plan requires that we recommend permits on a 3-year basis, so we should, in 12 years we should recommend permits 4 different times. I came last year. We made some pretty significant changes to black bear management, to our harvest strategies, allowing the use of any weapon over bait, and all of those types of things. And I was quite nervous about what we would actually be doing by changing all of those things. So I committed to keep monitoring the population and kind of ignore this part of the plan that said we would do this every 3 years. And so right now we're looking at things on an annual basis so that we don't have any drastic over-harvest or anything and get locked into something. But everything that we're recommending tonight is in accordance with the Black Bear Management Plan. It's just we're doing it every year until we feel comfortable with the changes that were made. So our plan goal is to maintain a healthy, balanced bear population. When we do that, though, we need to take into consideration livestock depredation, nuisance and human-bear conflicts, habitat issues and limitations, and other wildlife species population objectives. And part of our plan also states that we will provide recreational opportunity for hunters. We have 3 different strategies that we use to manage bear populations. So we have 30 wildlife management units in the state. Each of those units is managed under one of these strategies based on the bear population, based on historical trend data. So we look at age and sex of harvest and we follow that through long term. That gives us a good idea on what our population is doing. A light strategy is one where we don't have a lot of bears in the unit. We're trying to manage for an older age structure. So we want to harvest fewer bears. So we want that population to grow. So in that situation or scenario, we want to see less than 30% of the population be female. Most of the units in our state are managed under the moderate strategy. I'll also mention on the light strategy that there's little to no human conflict. So we don't have bears in campgrounds or coolers, no livestock depredation issues, that type of thing. The moderate strategy is the middle ground. Most of our units in the state are managed under this strategy. What we like to see, we do want to see some female harvest. We want to see about 30-40% of our harvest being female. This is to prevent too much population growth and maintaining a stable population. On these units, in order to qualify, you have to have moderate levels of human-bear conflict. We don't want to see a lot of problems or issues. We also want to see that in our harvest, we want to see that 25-35% of the harvest, when they're aged, the males, we want them to be about 25-30% of them being 5 years or older. That gives us a good age structure in that population. A liberal harvest is one that we use on a unit with a lot of conflicts. We have a lot of problems. We have issues with campgrounds. We have issues with livestock. Most of these are the ones that we use, the really heavy harvest strategies like harvest objective and quota and that type of thing. We want to see fewer adult males in the population. We want our female harvest to be higher, about 40-45%, because we are trying to reduce that population. And those units are typically ones with a lot of human-bear conflict. So our current status of bears in the state, in about 2009, so bears are different than big game animals in that we can't go do flights and do sightability and all of that type of thing and give us a good population estimate. We have to use our long-term data trends in order to try and estimate bear populations. So what we use, we've got over 15 years of data. We require that all of our hunters bring in the bear that they harvest or any of the bears that we take for nuisance or those types of things. We monitor age, sex, and have the teeth aged and all of that so that we get a good idea of structure of our populations. And we can take that harvest data and you can go back and kind of reconstruct a population to give you an idea of what that population looks like. And right now, based on our 15 years of data that we've collected, we estimate that we've got probably a minimum of 4,100 bears in the state. In addition to that, we also look at bear denning data. So each of our regional offices have female bears that are radio collared. Every spring, we go into those dens, and we'll look to see if those bears have reproduced. Bears will keep cubs with them for about 2 years. So we want to see that if they've got cubs of the year, we want to see the condition, the body condition of the female during hibernation and monitor that for production. We combine that over a five-year period, and if you over two of the 5 years you see cubs in the den, that indicates that your population is recruiting and that you're doing well. Right now, we estimate that our populations, our bear populations, are increasing about 5-6% annually. So last year, when we made the drastic changes to our, we made some really significant season changes. We added a summer season. We now allow people to use any weapon over bait, which in the past, over bait, you were restricted to archery tackle only. We kind of made a promise, I made a promise, that if the harvest exceeded too much, we would come in and reduce permits. We wanted to see an increase. Our average statewide success rate usually is between 42-45%. In 2014, which was last year when I came around, our harvest success rate was 50%. This last year, it dropped a little bit to 47%. So although we increased our permits a lot, we didn't increase our harvest success dramatically. The one thing that we did do, though, in 2014, our sport harvest was 283 bears, so that's hunter harvest. And our depredation and nuisance take between wildlife resources and wildlife services was 95 bears. So we had a total harvest of 378. What we were trying to do with our season changes was reverse that. We wanted to see higher sportsman take, less take by government agencies, and reduce that trend. And so we tried, rather than dramatically increasing permits across the board, we tried to play with seasons and harvest structure. And I'm happy to say that we did do what we were trying to do. Our total sport harvest went up to 325 from 283, and our depredation and nuisance tape decreased to 45. So overall, it's kind of where we wanted to be. So just looking here, the line with the triangles are actually the number of permits that were offered. And you can see this last year that we had a big spike in the number of permits that were offered. The important thing to remember about that, though, is that the permits that we offered were lower success hunts, like spot and stalk. They're really hard and difficult to do. So even though we increased a lot, they were lower success. The one thing, too, to look at here are the bars. The light gray color indicates sport take, and the dark gray on the top of the bar indicates depredation and nuisance take. And you can see that on the end here, 2014 is the second bar over, and you can see that depredation and nuisance had increased. And this last year, we were able to get that down. And then just one more representation of depredation and nuisance. Since 2006, you can see that we maintain our depredation and nuisance take to around 40 to 45 bears, somewhere in there. 2014, we had quite a dramatic increase in problems and issues. And like I said, this year it dropped back down to historical levels. Whether or not that was a blip caused by weather conditions, you know, no mast or anything like that, I can't say, although we want to continue what we're doing to see if we can keep that depredation and nuisance from being an issue in the future. So just to go over the seasons again, before our changes last year, we had one spring season. And it allowed both archery and it allowed baiting and hound hunting together. It did create problems for the division having those two seasons combined. Particularly in the northeastern region, we get complaints about hounds running off of bait, and vice versa. And so we were trying to reduce the conflict. So what we did is tried to put two seasons in the beginning and allow hound hunters to go first and then bait hunters to go second and give them both a week of the prime period, which is about the first week of June. And there was a little bit of controversy over it, but I think it went really well. So during the spring season, no baiting is allowed. You can use hounds only, or you can spot and stalk if you choose to do that. And I'll say that during that season, the percent of our permits filled, so this isn't percent success because we aren't surveying people to find out who did and didn't hunt. This is just of the number of permits that we issued, 49% of them were filled during the spring season. And that season, we're proposing run from April 2nd to June 3rd. So our summer limited entry, we don't allow hounds during this period. The prime reason is this is the number one time for our deer and elk herds to be fawning and calving and that type of thing, and it's harder to when you have hounds and stuff during that time period. So to protect that season, we're limiting it to baiting or spot and stalk. Consistent with last year, originally we were trying to reduce conflicts between the two. There was a request that 2 weeks of pre-baiting be allowed for the bait hunters because they have a harder time getting bears used to baiting and that type of thing. We're requesting that the baiting be limited to 1 week prior to the season beginning, so they can begin baiting, but they can't actually begin hunting until June 4th. It did resolve conflicts. There were some conflicts still that came in or reports of conflicts. Most of them were during this pre-baiting period when people were putting bait out, probably seeing some things off the trail cameras where a dog ran through. I mean, if you put a bait out, you're bear hunting, and you're using hounds, which Trace the bear, there's a high likelihood that one or the two are going to cross each other. So we expect that if we continue to allow the two things, we'll still see a little bit of conflict. The percent permits filled during this season was actually our highest of all of the seasons, and it was at 62%. We're proposing a fall limited entry, archery only, bait only, so you're limited to archery equipment only. This is on the Book Cliffs unit only. The season dates for this would be August 8th to September 9th. You can bait or you could spot and stalk. One of the things that we ran into last year was when we allowed the pre-baiting on the spring season, it wasn't allowed on any other season that allowed baiting. So we want to be consistent. So if we're going to allow pre-baiting 1 week early, we want to do it on all of the seasons that allow baiting. Our percent permits filled during this season, this last year was 40%. And there was an error on the sheet that was sent out to you. I think it said 0%. That it should have said 40%. And the D is missing on there. Why do I find the errors when I'm up in front of you guys? Our other season that we're proposing is our fall limited entry. We haven't made any changes to this season at all. It does allow the use of hounds, does allow the use of bait at the same time. Typically, we have reduced conflicts during this time because bears are harder to bait in the fall than they are in the spring season. We're proposing the dates for this run on August 20th to September 26th. It kind of closes down during all of the big game seasons so that we don't have hounds and big game hunter conflicts. And then it starts up again on October 29th and goes through November 17th. The percent permits filled during the season was at 41%, and again, we request to allow 1 week early on the baiting. LaSalle and San Juan, the dates for that unit are a little bit different. They've had some issues with bear hunters and limited entry elk hunters, specifically on the San Juan. It takes forever for somebody to draw those permits, and in the past there have been some pretty serious conflicts with some guns pulled and things like that, so we were just trying to eliminate that conflict. So on those two units, the season would run August 13th to September 9th. It would close down during the limited entry portion, and then it would open back up October 29th to November 17th. And then on the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek South, we propose that season run from October 4th to November 17th. We have a limited entry spot and stalk hunt. This is where the majority of the permit increases came last year. They're really hard and difficult hunts. It's basically walking around to find a bear wherever a bear might be. The Book Cliffs Little Creek Roadless, we're proposing a spring season that runs from April 2nd to June 3rd, and then a fall season from September 10th to November 17th. On the LaSalle and the San Juan, we're proposing October 4th to the 25th. And last year, when I came around on this, before we had increased the permits so much, our percent success on these hunts was higher than our surrounding states that offer this type of hunt. Colorado, it's about 12 to 14%. We were at 20% until we increased the permits so much, and then our percent permits filled dropped to 6%. And then we're proposing limited entry multi-season permits. You could, with this permit, if you draw it, you can hunt any of the seasons that are approved for the unit the permit is authorized for. You have to use the appropriate weapon type and method authorized for the season being hunted. It can't be used during harvest objective seasons or for pursuits. And the percent permits filled on this permit type is 49%, although I can't, without digging through all the stuff, I can't tell you which season they were more successful in. We're proposing some harvest objective hunts with a spring season date, and this is only on the 9 mile only has a fall hunt. The other harvest objective are mostly spring hunts. We're proposing April 2nd to June 3rd. The percent permits filled on this season were at 95%. On a harvest objective hunt, there's a quota that's offered, and the unit stays open until either the quota is met or the season closes. And again, these are the heavy harvest units, the ones where we have the most conflict. On the fall season dates, this is only on the 9 mile, we're proposing September 26th to October 28th. And on that unit, you have to spot and stock only. No bait or no hounds are allowed. The percent permits filled on that particular unit this last year for this season, it was at 70%, so that's quite high for a spot to stock. And then I'll have Randy come up and do the regional recommendation here.
Hi, I'm Randy Wood, Northern Region Wildlife Manager. This is the Northern Region recommendations, and one of the things I want you to do right off bat is look to the far right, and it says the same. We want to maintain, not increase, not decrease permits, but maintain where we're at. And just to give you a quick background is in 2014, our total sport harvest for the region, both units, were 5 bears. But our depredation, nuisance, and problem bears take were 8 bears. We went into this looking at trying to shift harvest to the sportsman and away from nuisance bear. And this year we harvested a total of, let me get this right, 11 bear sport harvest and only 1 nuisance bear. So we're headed in the right direction. We feel that we're going where we want to go, but we want more than 1 year to look at it. So we would like to just maintain where we're at. That's our recommendation. Same hunts as last year.
Thanks, Randy. And then just to, I'll go through to the regional ones, and I know that you guys received a letter from the Houndsman Association, and that was prior to the division kind of finalizing everything that we have. The Book Cliffs Bitter Creek South and the Book Cliffs Little Creek Roadless, the Northeastern region had originally proposed increasing permits on those 2 units. They've since backed off on that, and they've requested to keep things and maintain them the same for another year to see how things are going. And so that is one change to the packet that you were sent out. The only other changes from the Northeast region on the North Slope West Daggett Three Corners, they're actually decreasing by 3. And on the Wasatch Mountains of Minequin Current Creek, they're requesting an increase of 4, and that's to address some problems that they had out there. Other than that, everything else out there is being maintained the same. Our central region units, Central Mountains, Nebo, that one they're requesting it be the same. The Wasatch Mountains West is a unit that we had a lot of livestock depredation problems and a lot of nuisance bears. These are the cabin units and all of that along the Wasatch Front. So last year we came in with some pretty strong harvest recommendations. The region met pretty much their quota really quickly. They feel like they've addressed some of the problems, and so they're requesting a decrease of 15 on that unit. Our southeastern region, our bear populations down there are doing really well. And we do have some harvest issues that we're still trying to address down there. So the region chose to increase on all of their units down there. Our southern region, they're decreasing on the beaver by 5, the Panguitch Lake Zion by 1, and they're requesting an increase on the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz and the Plateau Fish Lake. Our general pursuit season, we're recommending we keep the dates this in line with where we've traditionally held it, a spring season from April 2nd to June 3rd, a summer season from July 4th to August 7th, and a fall season October 29th to November 17th. We're recommending the restricted pursuit season again on the Book Cliffs, the La Salle and the San Juan, which receive a lot of pressure from their really desired units for training dogs and all of that type of thing. And to help restrict the use of those units, we have a restricted pursuit season. The region down there has had some nuisance issues, and so they're trying to play with some of the pursuit things to see if they can reduce nuisance issues and that type of thing, and use pursuit in different ways. And so right now, you'll see a discrepancy between the La Salle number of restricted pursuit offered in San Juan. The region down there would like to maintain these levels for a couple of years and then flip-flop the numbers to see if there are any differences in nuisance and reported problems. There is one rule change that we're requesting tonight. This comes at the request of the Forest Service, who has a rule, and I don't understand all of exactly what their rule says, but their request, in order to bait in the state of Utah, we've required that you get permission either from the private landowner. You have to apply for a bait station, basically, and get a certificate of registration from the division in order to bait. Part of that is that we require that you bring in a permission slip from the private landowner, the Forest Service, or the BLM prior to us issuing the COR so that we know that they're in agreement with where a hunter places their bait station. The Forest Service rule doesn't allow them to give permission to do that activity on Forest Service property. So they've requested that we take that requirement out of our guidebook and our rule. But the BLM didn't make that request. And so we're leaving the BLM, but we're taking the Forest Service out. So basically, rather than do that first step on Forest Service property, you just have to come and obtain a COR. We're still working through the details of how we know where the forest may have closures or places that they don't want you to bait. But within our rule, we don't allow you to bait within within trailheads, major drainage, camp within a mile of a campground, within wilderness lands and that type of thing. And so we've got some things I think that will cover the whole issue, but we'll still maintain our end of the thing where we'll notify the Forest Service and the BLM of where we allow bait stations or where we authorize them so that they're aware. So in summary, we're recommending a total of 705 permits. From last year's recommendations, this is an increase of 14, which isn't that much difference overall. And one thing I am happy to report is that we did increase sport harvest. We did reduce some nuisance and depredation take by our agency and wildlife services. And although we did increase permit numbers, we didn't increase overall harvest success or harvest from what it was last year. This is just a breakdown by season where the increases and decreases come. The majority of increase went into the summer season to provide more opportunity there. And that's all I have for you.
Thank you, Leslie. Okay, we'd like to take and listen to any questions that the public has.
Lee Tracy, Cedar City. I represent the United Wildlife Cooperative. I'm not a bear hunter or a cougar hunter or a coyote hunter, so I don't know much about predators, but you showed us the difference between 2014 and 2015 regarding the percentages of sportsmen who were taking bears as opposed to in the division and stuff. How does that happen? Do you target certain bears and make phone calls to sportsmen, or how does that work?
So the biggest thing that we did last year when we came around and did recommendations, we increased permits and we played with the structure of where we were offering permits in places where we needed that increased harvest. In areas where we didn't have nuisance problems or issues, we left those units alone. But by adding that additional season in the summer, we increased take there, and I believe, but I can't do this without doing a survey, but I believe that offering the ability to use a rifle over bait also increased success. So by changing method and by adding a season and then manipulating where we increased permits, we were able to kind of control that without affecting places where we didn't want to increase our harvest.
Okay, another question, and maybe you just answered it. What is the best way to remove those nuisance bears?
So
you know, we have some strategies for sportsmen. How does that happen when you remove them?
So what typically happens, it depends on the situation. Each one is evaluated on a case-by-case basis, and it depends on the level of threat that the bear presents. So like a bear just wandering through a campground isn't that big of a threat. It's basically considered a sighting. The more aggressive that the incident becomes, the more the division either responds or we try and get a hunter in there. And when we try and get a hunter, what we do is we go through our limited entry permits for that unit, or in some cases this last year we used harvest objective permits, and we go through and we call people till we find somebody that's willing to come and harvest that particular bear.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Leslie from the public?
Troy Justinson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. As you stated going through the plan here, was it safe to say that everybody's pretty happy with the houndsman, sportsman, and everybody?
Yes.
Yes. So would it be safe to say
if something
broke, why fix it? And what I'm going at is last year on the baiting season, we were allowed to bait 2 weeks prior. This year your recommendation is for 1 week. If things are going so well and everybody's pretty happy, why the change in that?
Last year the division recommendation was to keep those two seasons separate. I mean, the whole thing was to keep the two seasons separate, and I still kind of feel that that's what I want to do. So that's the difference in the discrepancy. If it were to go through, I don't think it would change much, although we did get some complaints.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, questions from the rack. Maybe I could ask Robert if you wouldn't mind addressing the Fish and Wildlife, or I'm sorry, the Forest Service policy, because it seems rather nebulous to me.
Yeah, I was going to say something during the comment, but. Good as time as any. So the Forest Service recognizes the state's authority to manage hunting, fishing regulations. And so we're basically taking ourselves out of that middleman situation. We'd still continue to coordinate with the department and identify any areas that because of a specific closure order or through recommendation with the department, we'd ask for no baiting permits. That interrupt with public safety, health concerns, resource damage. So it's just basically, and we can do that in two different ways. It's an official closure order or provide the department with some kind of statewide map that recognizes these recommendations for no baiting across the state on national forests.
Any other questions? Leslie, what is the harvest strategy in the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek unit currently?
There are several. on the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek, it is the specific strategy itself is light.
Okay. Is there real concern by the division regarding the reproductive performance of the population there?
No.
The letter kind of suggested that might be a problem.
Well, so we've increased permits there, but all of the data kind of suggests that, you know, we're managing within a light strategy. Hold on, let me pull this out and I'll just kind of... Hold on, I have it. One thing about the Book Cliffs is it's one of the Book Cliffs, the San Juan and the La Salle, are basically the premium units for bear hunters in the state. And so there's a lot of passion and all of that wrapped into those three units in particular. They get a lot of pressure. They're really productive bear units. They are our trophy bear units as far as houndsmen and bear hunters go. So let me just pull this up really quick. So right now on the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek, you want the south or the Little Creek, sorry?
I think it's the south.
Okay, so on the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek south, actually that one's a moderate strategy. I was reading you the Little Creek. Our percent adult male is at 41%, and on a moderate strategy, we want that to be between... ...25 and 35, so it's high, which indicates a really older population. Then the female, so our percent adult range is on the light end of harvest, and then our percent female is at 29%, and that's also within the light range. So the plan calls for an increase, and that's why the region keeps doing that, to do it in accordance with the plan. But we also try and listen to our sportsmen. So we did choose to stick with what we've got.
Thank you. Any other questions from the RAC? Okay, comments from the public. Oh. Sorry. Aaron Johnson.
I'm Aaron Johnson. I represent the Utah Houndsman Association. We did send a letter out to the RACs, both the Central and the Northern RAC, based on what we had seen the proposal was going to be. But with the change that Leslie and the Northeast region made to keep the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek South the same, we're happy with that. And so... no further comments. We support the DWR's proposal completely. We thank Leslie for her time and everything she's done, and it's super hard to argue with success. You know, when she changed all these strategies, she's basically accomplished what she set out to do, and we'd like to see that keep going in that direction. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mitch Herzog. Okay, I'm sorry. Right. Lee Tracy.
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. Because I've known Leslie for some time, per the Parowan Front deer transplant, and have seen her work not only there, but as DWR direct. I don't know what you're chairman?
I'm something, no.
Whatever you are.
On the mammals coordinator.
On the bear committee as well as the cougar committee where we had representatives. She's very successful at what she does, and we're very impressed with the plan and support it fully. Thanks.
Thank you. And the last card I have is from Troy Justinson.
Troy Justinson, Sports and Fish Wildlife. If you put that screen up, we can't even see you behind there.
That's why it's there.
It's like talking to the great Oz behind the curtain right there. Now, we appreciate what Leslie's done. This is not an easy thing when you got a bunch of different interests here. And though we don't always agree, we definitely appreciate what you've done here.
I'm speaking tonight on behalf of two groups, the Utah Bowman Association and Sportsman Fish and Wildlife, and we support the division's recommendations with one exception. Last year there was a two-week pre-baiting season, and we'd like to see that included, not cut back to a week. We spoke with Dan Cockane of the Houndsman. He agreed with that. He would support that as well. We understand you're always going to have some conflict, and it's not conflict that's unique to bear baiting. There's all human nature is to have conflict. If you've ever hunted with Bryce, they're good. There's always a conflict. So we would just like to see that, you know, kept in place. The Central RAC voted to have that as well. They passed that. We'd encourage this RAC to pass it as well, to accept these recommendations, but have the two-week pre-baiting. Thank you.
Any other comments from the public? Okay, moving to the RAC, comments from the RAC. Bryce.
One question. On the San Juan La Salles, in the fall, you had the success like at 6 or 8%. That's, is that really that low?
On the spot and stock, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's stock only, not hounds.
Yeah, the hounds actually are at...
I was a little confused by the chart.
Yeah, sorry. With all of the different season structures, it's really hard to keep them all straight. On the spot and stock, it was 6% on the La Salle and San Juan.
Okay.
And the year before, it was at 20. So that increase in permits lowered that success. On the fall, well, no, I lied to you. It is at 8 and 4. 8 on the La Salle and San Juan is at 4.
Okay. It just seemed really low. So.
It is low.
Anyway, one other comment. I just want to echo what everybody else has said, how fabulous of a job you do, and kind of at the bear thing and the mammal thing, but then keeping everybody, you know, as happy as you can. So
thank
I think you.
You
do a great job.
Thanks.
Any other comments? Yeah, Justin.
As far as applications, the people who applied for those spot and stock late season tags, did we... Were there more, I don't know what the percent rate was, as people that put in for them? Did that?
Yeah, people put in for them, and they were all taken. There weren't any left over.
So it did also help with points and everything else also?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'd have to go and look at, I haven't looked at odds and points and all of that. I didn't look at any of that, so.
It's giving opportunity and helping people.
And that is the one thing that this did, I mean, with the summer season in particular. By opening, I mean, I'm an archery hunter and that type of thing, but by opening up bait hunting and allowing the use of any weapon, we opened bear hunting up to a whole different constituency that wasn't able to go before, because you either had to do hounds or archery. And now we've opened it up to some other opportunities.
Any other... comments or motions? Craig.
I would like to make a motion to accept this, but I would like to amend it to have the two-week pre-bait. So I don't know if we need to vote on that amendment first or...
Okay, no, we can just have your motion be that. And so is there a second? Justin seconds the motion. So the motion at hand is to approve the proposal as presented with a two-week pre-bait time period. Any discussion on the motion? Are we ready for the question? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
The aye have, motion passes. Oh, did we have any nays? No, it was unanimous. Sorry. Getting ahead of myself.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Next item on the agenda is the Sheeprock Mountains Sage Grouse Management Area Greater Sage Grouse Translocation. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Avery Cook, the Upland Game Project Leader for the Utah Division of Wildlife. I'll be presenting the Sheeprock Mountain Sage Grouse Management Area Greater Sage Grouse Population Augmentation. So to start with a little background on the Sheeprock sage grouse population and sage grouse in general, sage grouse were declared not warranted for listing under the Endangered Species Act just earlier this year in September. However, Utah is still moving forward with conservation actions according to our management plans. The Sheeprock Mountain sage grouse population level is reaching a critically low level, and we're concerned about totally losing the population. So this transplant is in addition to other habitat improvements and predator control to basically buy us some time while our habitat improvements take effect and to boost the population. Since sage grouse are a state-sensitive species, there's some additional requirements for moving and doing transplants within the state. We need a management plan, which we have in place. We need to run the proposal through the Research Development Coordinating Committee. That is complete. There were no comments back from the RDCC. And then finally, we need RAC and board approval for the transplant. The overview of what we're going to be doing with the transplant, we'll be transplanting birds in March and April, so during the lekking period. We'll be capturing sage grouse on leks, and we'll be following guidelines developed during previous sage grouse transplants, namely the Strawberry Valley transplant a few years ago, where we were able to move birds from other areas with strong populations in the state into the Strawberry Valley that was at a similar critical low level and recover that population to where it is now. So we will be transporting and releasing the sage grouse the same night, so we'll trap in the evening and move them to the sheep rocks by dawn. We'll release them on active leks in core areas of the sheep rock sage grouse management area, and that is to basically have the new birds meet up with resident birds, and they learn the area, and they tend to stay in the same place without wandering and have a higher survival rate when they're released with other birds. We'll be providing predator control. We've got an ongoing contract with Wildlife Services, and we'll be doing additional habitat work. And there's also continuing habitat work going out there currently. Proposing transplants for this spring 2016 and also 2017-2018, proposing to move 30 females and 10 males each year for those 3 years. We're planning to monitor survival and habitat use via USU researchers. We'll be looking at habitat use both on resident birds and the transplanted birds, and also comparing the survival of the transplanted versus resident birds. We'll be moving the birds from Parker Mountain or Box Elder to the Sheep Rocks. We may do just Box Elder or just Parker or a combination thereof, depending on weather conditions and other factors. We chose these two populations because they're genetically similar to the Sheep Rock Mountain population. There are some of the largest populations in the state. They're very robust populations. They're also geographically close enough for the logistics to work out with that one-night trap and release. Just another little bit of background on why we're doing this, or why we're proposing this transplant on the Sheep Rocks. That top graph shows the kind of normal population fluctuations within the state, and the sage grouse typically cycle on a 8 to 10 year time period. You can see there was a low in 2012. Since then, we've been on a steady upward trend throughout the state, except for the sheep rocks, where since 2012 they've continued down, and we're at a very low population level. And again, we're concerned that it will go to zero without some drastic action, including this transplant. Just Just to give you an idea of how many birds we are requesting to move relative to the populations we'll be taking them out of, that bar on the left represents about 3,100 birds that we think, or we estimate to be in the box elder population, and 3,900 birds we estimate to be in the Parker Mountain population. From those two populations combined, we're proposing to move 40 birds per year, which is roughly 0.5% of those birds present. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions from the public? Lee.
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. This isn't specifically about the presentation, but is this transplant an idea of what is to come, or has the division considered transplanting to other places? West of Cedar, I've hunted antelope out there for a long time, and I've never seen one.
We're not proposing to do any transplants to introduce new populations. This is a transplant for one of the designated SGMAs in our management plan that has continued to decline while all the others have gone back up through this latest population cycle.
Any other questions from the public? Questions from the RAC? Matt.
Do we know why the sheep rocks are having so many problems? Is it habitat related?
It's kind of death by a thousand cuts. There's a lot of habitat related problems. There's quite a bit of juniper encroachment into the critical brood rearing areas, and there's a strong avoidance of sage grouse of trees, basically. So a lot of these habitat projects are going to be addressing the kind of juniper encroachment into core areas, and as soon as you cut down those trees, the sage grouse move back into that. So that's part of it. We also have some other invasive species. There's some predation issues, especially at such a low population level. There's recreation disturbance out there. There's quite a few factors that are contributing.
John.
On the birds that move, do you monitor the survival of them, or is it just going out and counting and seeing if they increase year to year, the actual ones that you move?
So with the ones that we move, we'll be putting radio collars on them, and that was in association with Utah State University. So we'll be radio collaring some of the birds that we are transplanting to keep track of their survival, and then we'll also be collaring some of the resident birds so we can compare the survival rates of the resident versus newly introduced birds.
Any other questions? Russ and then Chris.
Yeah, Avery, you know, this SGMA has had a lot of habitat issues, obviously. You know, fire being a big issue out there. Have there been, well, two questions here. Is the sage that's been planted back, or the habitat, you know, but consisting of sage, is that it is sufficient height that it can support nesting? And then the second question, is there protections, as in fire breaks and so forth, that will help protect that habitat as well?
I'm not up to date on what the current status of any sagebrush plantings are out there as far as recovery towards restoring brood-rearing habitat. We don't have a representative from the BLM here that would be familiar with some of those projects out there, or...
Chris?
Do we have anybody that knows?
No. I should know, but...
I mean, there's been a lot of work out there, and there's been successful seedings, but I'm not sure recent fires and the status of what's the recovery. So.
I think, you know, I mean, we can continue to put birds there. I think I fully support the effort and so forth, but we need to make sure that the habitat's going to be there, and then we can sustain it as well.
Yeah. And there's quite a bit of work going into fuels and also the juniper removal type of projects that really do open up quite a bit of space for the birds to move into.
Thank you.
Could you describe the predator removal efforts that Wildlife Services is going to do to reduce predation on the birds?
Jason, are you more familiar with the contract?
Jason Robinson, I'm the Upland Game Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife. We've got a contract with Wildlife Services, specifically looking at mostly red fox removal and raven control. Those are two species, red fox being a non-native to this area, but have been shown to be a pretty significant predator on sage-grouse in other areas and in the Sheeprock Mountains. And then raven removal is another activity done during the sage-grouse nesting period to try and reduce the number of ravens in that area. They're at significantly higher levels than they have been in the past, and they are a pretty significant predator on sage-grouse nests. So those are the two main strategies for predator control.
Any other questions from the RAC? No. Okay, I don't have any comment cards on this particular agenda item. If you'd like to make a comment, we'd like to have it, and if so, we can collect your card. Okie doke. Comments from the RAC. Craig.
I would just like to commend the division for their proactive approach, and I think even with some other species, I think we need to be more proactive with development and such, and try to fix some problems or maybe prevent some problems with habitat and growth in the state. So I just appreciate the proactive approach here.
Any other comments and or motion? Chris.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the proposed transplant as presented.
Second. Okay, Matt Clark, second. Discussion on the motion. Okay. All in favor of accepting the division plan as presented, signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. Motion passes. Unanimous. Okay. It looks like the RAC has winter break. We won't be meeting again until April 5th. So everyone, hopefully you have a nice holiday season and a good spring, and we'll see you back in the April 5th meeting, which will be here also. If there is no further business and there is no objection, the meeting will be adjourned. Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned.